Welcome back to Too Much Future. This is episode 3 of season 2. We're talking about Fallout 2. I'm Cameron Kunzelman.
I'm Michael Lutz.
We're talking about something today. We're talking about... had to look at my sheet of paper. We're talking about The Den.
Mm-hmm. The Den.
We have previously done the Temple of Trials. We have done The Village. M. Night Shyamalan's The Village.
At the end of that mission, it turned out that it was just the modern day, and all of Fallout was an elaborate theme park attraction.
Hold on, that's kind of true though, right? Because you're going around in the village, and you're like, oh, this is, you know, I don't know, melee weapon times, and you get to the next place, and it's not. There's a vertibird there.
Well, was there a vertibird? What? Did you see a vertibird?
Oh, no. Yeah, a vertibird. The crashed vertibird outside of town.
I didn't see that.
We talked about it last episode.
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't remember this at all.
I've also mind-wiped Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember because there's the Enclave Soldier? I told you I got, like, the little item off of his thing.
No, I don't remember any of this.
Okay, that happened. that did occur.
Okay, huh.
Mm-hmm. Where all I right. fought the... Because you fought the Mr. Handy, right?
No.
The malfunctioning Mr. Handy? Did we not talk about this at all?
No, I have no idea what you were talking about.
That's in the game.
I was going to say, this was in Klamath?
No, this was in the village, I think. No, yeah, it's in Klamath.
Yeah, what? What?
Yeah, you can go outside of town. It's the part where it kind of ruins it a little bit for you, because you can see, so there's like a robot you can fight, and if you defeat the robot, which I did by kicking and punching,
you can go
further into the map, and you can see that there's a crashed vertibird, and there's a soldier there, and it's meant to be a little bit mysterious, but when you mouse over it, it says, dead Enclave soldier.
Oh, okay. I don't remember us talking about this, and I didn't see it at all.
Maybe I forgot to bring it up. That could be true. Anyway, yeah, that's somewhere back in the game that we did already. But anyway, so you're in the village, and, you know, it's like, you know, quote-unquote tribals,
mm-hmm.
and then you go somewhere else, and it's not. So that's the same as the village.
The same. You go to the den, and suddenly no one gives a shit that you're a tribal.
No, not even a little bit, which is surprising because the entire economy of the den is predicated on enslaving people, including tribals.
Mm-hmm. And it's not mentioned really ever. So that's interesting. That's a choice of design, I guess.
Oh, really? So you never encountered anyone who talked to you about being a tribal?
No one who talked to me, no.
Wow. Yeah, I assumed I'd missed it because I am... not as thorough at playing the game as you are. But yeah, no, I didn't either. I mean, there's some weird stuff, I will say, kind of at the top here for people who love the den. Not a lot going on here. I feel like in the progression... Well, no, I take that back. I was going to say, in the progression of Fallout 1, you know, it kind of goes like the Vault, Shady Sands, and then into Junktown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the progression was, like, pretty big, you know, really, really different. And I was going to say, well, that's not really holding up in Fallout 2, but I actually think that might be wrong. This feels actually a whole lot like Junktown, in that there's one major quest.
Yes.
And then a lot of, like, small stuff around it.
I was going to say, I'm glad you brought this up, because I was also going to say that, in many ways, the locations thus far feel like riffs or responses to the first kind of little arc of the first game, and... The Den, in particular, has a lot of parallels to Junktown, but also it is trying to differentiate itself in ways that are maybe not entirely successful, I think, but they're at least there. So, yeah, but first, I should tell you, as I got to the Den, I got a random encounter of a bunch of raiders attacking some merchants and their guards.
Yeah, well, did you get the option to either go and do it or not?
Yeah, and that was weird. I wasn't expecting that. It was like, oh, would you like to, like, help them?
Yeah, I think that is a... Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, leave us a little comment. But I believe that is a byproduct of your, like, survival skill.
I see.
if you have a lower survival skill, I think each encounter has a survival rating, basically. And if you get to, you know, functionally roll higher, then it, you get an option of going and doing it versus rolling lower, and you just got to go do it no matter what it is. But I believe that's what survival does in this game, is it kind of manages, gives you the ability to manage encounters.
Oh.
It also might improve the encounters you had. I had an encounter too, but it was not combat. It was just some merchants hanging out. And what was kind of cool about it is that as soon as I went to the map, they were like, oh, hey, most people on this road don't stop to talk to, you know, they won't stop and trade. Would you like to trade?
Aww.
Yeah, so it was a, the encounter felt, you know, and I'm sure it's just a random encounter that can happen anywhere on the map, but it felt pretty cool in that there, that's just a little bit of dialogue of context, but really does, you know, I think make the world feel a little bit more special.
Mm-hmm. My random encounter was interesting because, well, as you said, in Klamath, it's old-timey times. Mm-hmm. No one in this random encounter had guns, except for me.
Hmm.
So, and also, there's a lot of people in this encounter. I think there's probably, like, three merchants, and each of them has, like, one or two guards, and then there are maybe half as many raiders. But what happened is, you know, I teleport into the encounter, and the raiders are going after the merchants, and then the guards come to the merchants' defense. So everyone just runs into, like, this little huddle and just starts stabbing each other. In sequence.
Mm-hmm. A grand melee.
Right? And meanwhile, I'm standing off to the side, like, shooting the raiders, or trying to shoot them in the head, and Sulik runs up and joins the stabbing circle. And eventually I won. And I think maybe one of the raider, or one of the merchants and a couple of the guards died, but there were enough raiders, or raiders, jeez. There were enough merchants left over that I could still trade, and they were surprisingly fine. Like, they didn't even have a little bit of flavor text. They were just like, yeah, sure, let's trade.
I like the idea there's a huge stabbing circle that happens, and then as soon as they're done, you're like, hey, y'all got any money from my rad scorpion tails here?
My gecko skins.
Yeah, my gecko skins. I got a couple gecko skins here.
I will say one thing that I do, that I am, so I went back and talked to, what's his name, Smiley, and got the gecko skin perk, whatever, the hide trapper.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems that I had in the first game, at about this point, was that even though I was supposed to be using guns, I was running out of ammo constantly, mm-hmm. and I did not have enough money to buy more ammo, and the ability to just, like, kill geckos and skin them and then sell their hides, I think, you know, at least partly because Twelinor has a good barter skill, has been kind of a lifesaver. It's allowed me to play the game in a way that feels more natural because I can actually buy ammo and use it.
Yeah, it also feels like a little bit more, you know, I guess there are, like, two modes of realism, you know, quote unquote realism, right, that are trading off here, right? So in the first game, I think the idea was, yeah, ammo's hard to get and guns are rare because it's the apocalypse, right? You know, nuclear weapons have decimated everyone. It's going to be hard for you to manage this thing. Mm-hmm. And like the gun runners, right, the people who have the guns are going to be extremely powerful and cool, right? So there's a little bit of realism there, but also like really hamstrings, I think, a lot of especially early gameplay in that game if you're doing that, as opposed to this one, which is another kind of realism of like a realism of economy, right? That if you go and put in all the primitive accumulation labor of murdering geckos that you can, then eventually you can create enough, you can flood the gecko skin economy and extract a whole lot of ammunition. So, you know, I guess I think that's like two competing modes of realism. And I think this is the better one as far as like a game is concerned,
mm-hmm.
Or at least this type of game. I think a game where you only get like four bullets is actually really, really cool. I think games like Metro do that really well,
mm-hmm.
or at least the first Metro game, right? Where getting good bullets is like, it is both your actual thing you can use in combat, and it is your currency, right? Mm-hmm. Bullets are currency in that game, which is cool.
Speaking of things that are currency that are not currency,
mm-hmm.
what's going on in the den?
All kinds of stuff, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
This is a place. why is it called the Den? Why do you think it's called the Den? Let's start there.
Well, no one tells you this. No one says, like, welcome to the Den. Here's how it got its name. But how shall I put this? It is the 90s, as we all know. I believe that they are attempting to play off the idea of a crack den.
That's also what I believe is going on. Yeah, it is interesting that despite the crack epidemic running rampant across America, particularly directed by the CIA toward the African American community in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because that is absurd, but also legitimately what occurred.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly horrifying if you know the history of crack. But despite that happening, and you would think that the Fallout tone of Fallout 1 would have put that in there. No. It is Fallout 2 where they begin to think maybe people in desperate circumstances might turn to drugs. And so this whole game, the Den is just full of people who are various different descriptors of drugs. Where there used to be serfs who had a feudal lord somewhere, unnamed. Now there are people who are just drug addicts in the general sense. And I wrote down some of the names that get used there. There's a Reliant.
Mm-hmm.
There's Addict.
Mm-hmm.
There is Kim Reliant.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a couple people who, I'm saying this, but I'm going to, obviously... in quotations, I don't approve of this language, jet whore.
I did not see any of those, huh?
There is someone who has labeled that behind... when you come into the town for the first time, it's the little shop to your left.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that is.
Is that Becky's?
No, that's to the right, across the street from Becky's.
Oh, Tubby's.
Yes. Yeah, yes, I think it is.
Yep.
The woman who lives in his back room.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that's her name. But yeah, so there's a lot of, Fallout something going on here. Fallout realism, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Again, realism in some sort of bracketed term. About, people like to do drugs and they're going to do them in the apocalypse.
Yep.
And they do jet.
Did you talk to Tubby at all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How much could Tungsten get out of Tubby?
I think I could just trade with him. I don't think I could talk to him about much else.
Oh, okay. So, for Twelinor, Tubby was interesting because he's like the local lore master. And he's the one who explains that drugs are the basis of the economy in the Den. And he compares them explicitly, to grain or gold.
What?
Right, yeah, he's just like, you know how some societies use grain or gold as a currency? Well, in the Den, it's drugs. And it's like, okay, I guess I know this. And then this is one of my favorite bits. I could ask him who was in charge here, and I love this dialogue so much. It's so weird that I wrote it down. You ask him who's in charge here, and Tubby says, "No one, I'm afraid. The Den is an anarchistic place where a kind of Darwinian struggle is played out. Only the strongest, fastest, or smartest will survive here. I'm sure you will find your niche."
This is awful.
And your response to that is just like, okay.
So, my resonant call across Too Much Future, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Is this Fallout humor?
So,
is this funny? Is this satire?
Yeah, I was going to say...
What is this?
So,
what the hell is going on?
One of the reasons this struck me is because it calls back to what I started noticing around the end of the first game, which is that the moments of Fallout humor were kind of meta humor and were also kind of just lazy writing and trying to pass off lazy writing as humor, where it's just like, here's a game situation. Like, I'm not going to work to justify it, but I'm going to put it in a flip tone, and that way you'll just kind of buy into it, because I will acknowledge how stupid it is, and you will know that it is stupid, and we will all get along cynically together. So there's that angle, I think. Because there could have been something pretty interesting here in the Den if it were... So going back and comparing this to Junktown, where we had... Mm-hmm. Two people, we had Gizmo and we had Killian Darkwater, who were kind of these powerful figures vying for control of the town. And they each represented kind of, you know, different lifestyles or different priorities and moralities and things like that. The Den sort of looks at that and is like, no one is in charge here, right? This is like total free fall. And whoever is here and on top right now is only there kind of by dint of whatever, you know, ruthless impulses they have. And I think like a modern game, quote unquote, you would probably get something here where there would be like a bunch of factions and you could manipulate the factions and one could come out on top and so on and so forth. As it is, Tubby's description here kind of, it's like the flavor text on a Magic card, right? It gives you an idea of the world, but the world itself is not really mechanically evident in any way.
I'll forgive the slight of Magic flavor text one time.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like Magic flavor text is, it serves its purpose within Magic the game, but like in Fallout 2 or Fallout in general, right? There's, I want maybe something a little more than just someone saying like, oh, by the way, this is a place of anarchistic Darwinian struggle. Good luck.
I think this kind of overriding tone of like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you get it, I get it, let's keep going. That is like not compelling. And I think that weirdly enough, that when people say, you know, the kind of Magic has, or not Magic, whoa, Magic has never lost anything. It's a great game going for 26 years now. Shout out to Magic the Gathering. But when Fallout has kind of lost some of what it had in Fallout 1 and 2, I think they're often referring to this kind of tonal thing of like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're all in on this joke together. And like, it just doesn't work for me, like straight up. I don't think it's all that good. And I actually think, you know, there's a lot of the kind of vibe that New Vegas resuscitates or brings some of that back. And I've never, like, I don't like New Vegas more than I like Fallout 3. I think they're about the same in my, you know, my brain.
Shots fired, dear listeners.
I mean, we'll get there and we'll do it. I haven't played New Vegas through to completion since it came out. I literally got it the day it came out, and I think I played it for like 4 days straight, and I was like, oh, that's fun. I had a good time doing that. I've never gone back to it. So, you know, but I say that having not played it in 15 years or something, or 10 years. But that's all to say, you know, I think part of the reason I think that New Vegas is mechanically and kind of narratively a more interesting game, but I also think it digs back into this well of a little bit of cynicism, a little bit of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, in a way that Fallout 3 is like complete sincerity, or mostly sincerity, does not. And while I think Fallout 3 has some like issues in a general sense, and I think it's very confused about what it's trying to do sometimes, you know, like the giant robot that yells about America, you know, I think at least the sincerity, it gives me more to think about sometimes than like, oh, maybe I'm being foolish by thinking about this too much because it's so wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, in the Den, yeah, that's all happening. I don't really have it seems, like you were saying, to be this kind of like contemporary commentary, but again, like 10 or 15 years too late for what it's trying to comment on. And there's a lot of much like Klamath, a lot of NPCs running around here.
So many NPCs. The children. Did you notice the children?
Yeah, do you know what they do to you?
They pickpocket you.
They steal all your shit.
Yep.
They've stolen critical quest items from me at this point.
Yep. They can steal anything in your inventory. And that is, that's a choice. And, like, you don't get any notification that you've been pickpocketed, right? They just, you can see them do their little animation. But also, like, the animation doesn't always mean that they're successful. So what happens is, for the listener, in front of, I think, like, nearly every store in the Den. Also, I guess let's sort of lay out the Den. The Den is two maps. There's, like, an east side and a west side. You enter on the west side, and in front of every store here, there's like two orphan children. And when you walk through the front door, the children make the little like stealing animation, and then you have to check your inventory and see if they stole anything. And if you, well, if you're Twelinor, you can actually turn around and then pickpocket them back.
What?
they're surprisingly easy to pickpocket in that way.
I think I could pickpocket any child on Earth. Yeah. In the sense of I could knock them down and take whatever I wanted from them. Much like taking candy from a baby.
Yes. this is just an annoying thing that happens. And these kids do not stop pickpocketing you. And if you, surprisingly, you know, if you murder these children, it's not something that the game looks upon you highly for.
Yeah, the classic hating it when you murder children game mechanic. Does that implies that Twelinor might have murdered a child?
No. I just happened to, do you remember, what was it, last episode where, a child ran into my knife fight and started fighting with me? Mm-hmm. That ended up with like a death, and you get a perk called Child Killer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What's the perk do? Does it make you better at it?
No. I had to look this up because I reset because I was like, oh god, this is a mess. But apparently what it does is you just become... Somehow everyone in the Wasteland knows that you are a child killer. It's like a permanent deduction from your karma, essentially. Like, there are certain NPCs, certain characters who will not talk to you if you are a child killer. One of whom, actually, I believe, is Becky, who lives across the street from Tubby.
Becky is the, she's the owner of the little bar there?
Yeah, little bar casino.
She gave me a quest, and I could not complete it because I couldn't find Fred.
Yeah, so Becky, I completed it, but, at great sort of toil of... Oh, so what she does is she's like, there's this guy named Fred, and he owes me like $200. Go collect this debt for me. And the thing about the den, as we've already said, is that there are tons of NPCs standing around. None of them are differentiated. You can't, like, you can't mouse over them and get their names, because they're all just, like, Kim Reliant and things like that. So you have to kind of just go around and talk to everyone and hope that you find this guy, Fred. And it turns out I found him in her bar. So
he's just literally standing there.
Yes. He was just one of the people in the bar. And the thing that made him stand out was, so everyone that you look at is some form of addict. When you look at Fred, it said something, it was like, you see a citizen of the den or something like that. So that's how you're supposed to know. Right.
A plus on that one, Fallout designers.
So, let me just follow through with this. You talk to Fred. You're like, hey, give me $200. I've come to collect for Becky. He flips out and is like, oh, no, I can't pay that. You know, what if I just gave you half and you spotted me the rest or something like that? And it's like, so you want me to pay your debt? Me, the collector who's been sent to rough you up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And because Twelinor is good and noble and so on and so forth, eventually... I was just like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And then he pushes you even further, and he's like, what if you paid $150? And I'll just pay $50. This is still pushing your luck, but I have decided I'm going to commit to this bit. Like, Twelinor is going to be, like, just the most goody-two-shoes person she can possibly be. So she took him up on that. I paid off Fred's debt with $150 of my own and $50 of his. And then Becky gave me a second quest, which was to go find a guy named Derek who borrowed a book from her. Derek, like Fred, does not have a name. I had to look up where he was. He stands outside of Mom's Diner, which we haven't talked about yet. But I went over, that's over on the other side of the map, so I went over to that half of the town. I found Fred, and then Fred is like, oh, I don't know where I put that book. It might have been in that building, or that building, or that building. And that is nearly a direct quote. He is not naming specific buildings.
And from the isometric perspective, that building doesn't make any sense.
Right. So then I look up, like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Because this makes no sense. The book appears in one of four random places in the map, and it is just on the ground somewhere. And I could not find it. I could not see it. Like, and because I had the walkthrough, I looked up where it was supposed to be. It's like, it could be in one of these four places, and I went to each of those four places, and it is literally, like, I don't even know what a book looks like. I don't think I've seen a book in this point in the game, so I have no idea what I'm looking for. And it's just something on the ground somewhere in this map.
Great. That's, you know what? That's game design, y'all.
Yep.
Put that feather in your hat. If you're a young game designer, you want to do that one. You want to make sure, number one, no one knows what the book looks like. Number two, random generation. Number three, not telling anyone where anything is. That's good game design.
Yep.
I can't believe, like, everyone on Earth who's like, I'm just mad now that there's quest markers everywhere. I hate it. There's so many quest markers that tell you what to do. And it's, I don't. I grew up playing this game.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about quest markers.
Please, please, mark everything so I can get to it in my own sweet time.
Yeah, just mark the building at least. Be like, it's in this building, you gotta search around it. That's fine. That's acceptable to me. But good God. Mm-hmm. Let me use my detective vision to find it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's great. So you didn't find it, you didn't complete that quest.
Did not complete that one, no.
So you're out $150 for nothing at this point.
For, yeah. Yes.
Do you see the, I'm trying to think of other stuff. There's a Brotherhood of Steel in the western part of the map that you enter on there.
Yeah, this is
a Brotherhood
weird.
Of Steel outpost. Yeah. Did you talk to that guy?
Yeah. He's like, I can't remember exactly what it is he says, but he's like, you know, we've been watching you, Twelinor.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is like the first time. What?
Yeah, his name is Joshua, and he's standing, it's basically, you know, all these, like, burned out buildings, you know, post-war buildings, all this kind of stuff, and then, like, a science fiction building, and of course, that's the Brotherhood of Steel outpost, and yeah, there's a dude named Joshua standing out there, and he says the exact thing that you just said, and he's like, you just think you're on some simple quest, while you're not really on just some simple quest, you're part of something much greater and bigger. Anyway, goodbye. Don't talk to me anymore. And then if I try to talk to him again, he's like, I will not. I have nothing else to say.
Yeah. Yeah. He just like,
don't talk to me.
Just shuts you down entirely.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a little, that to me also feels a little bit of lampshade hanging, you know, like, ho ho, the Brotherhood of Steel is here. Ho ho. There's something bigger for you in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also,
you know, epic quest.
What feels interesting to me about it also is that, it's pretty ominous. Like, the the later games, or I think, you know, at least the Bethesda games, and I've talked about this in the previous season, sort of adopt the Brotherhood of Steel uncritically in a way. That I'm not saying that this game is necessarily, like, being very complex about, but even, like, the first game, I think the Brotherhood of Steel was a little bit more positive in their portrayal, and this, like, for this being the first time that you encounter them in this game, it's kind of a tonal shift. Like, we're watching you.
Yeah, it definitely is, like, shadowy government organization kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we do know, based on Fallout 1, we do know that they have, like, infiltrated operatives everywhere.
Yes.
Because we had to rescue one.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, so there's that. I forget the guy's name, but you talk to the fence, basically, the guy who sells all the stolen goods that kids get.
His name is Flick.
Flick, yeah. He speaks in a, like a Scorsese film, Italian accent.
Yeah, so his name is Flick. But for some reason he speaks like when he takes all of the stolen goods from the children, and he calls them like the little paisanos.
Yes, yeah. And he's like, I take care of the little paisanos, and Tungsten is just like, what? What's a pie? What? But yeah, so he, you know, he basically, he implies that all of the children are working for him, and then that all of the and that he is working for mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so mom is kind of like the godmother.
Mm-hmm.
Of this town of two screens and maybe 50 people.
Yes.
I don't know if the mob works as well there in that situation as it does in other situations. But I thought it was cool. But yeah, he's like trying to sell all my stuff back to him, and you can't pickpocket his barter inventory off of him, which is a bummer.
Aww.
It's a separate inventory. So yeah, they like stole my good item that like helps me repair a vehicle, the thing that I stole off the crashed vertibird, they stole that from me.
Yeah,
I looted multiple shovels, they stole all that from me.
No, not my shovels.
Yeah, my shovels. So that was a bummer. But yeah, so he's just got general stuff. If you have a lot of money at this point in the game, I guess I could have killed a lot more geckos, you mm-hmm. know, and could have had some more money, but I don't. So he's not super helpful. And I guess I can only think of two other things that are here. One is the mummy.
Oh, yes.
There's a guy named Great Ananias.
Yes, Ananias.
Ananias.
Yep.
Is that a reference to something that I don't get?
No, Ananias is it's just a biblical name. It was very common for... It's very common for Puritans, right? Like, the characters named Ananias show up in... a lot of like early modern plays.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
So he's there, and he says like, "Ooh, come to the mysteries of the netherworld."
Mm-hmm.
It's his little variety show, and he for $25 he will show you a mummy,
mm-hmm.
And he'll also just for free tell you a story about a ghost in the other room.
I love that. I love it that it's like, oh yeah, well you know you're not impressed with this mummy. The other room of this house is haunted.
Yeah, and so you know, I paid the money to see the mummy. I paid the money to see the mummy.
new theme but, song.
Yeah, that's it. But I did that, and he opens it up, and it's the quote unquote sarcophagus. It's just a coffin that's like painted on the inside, mm-hmm. and there's a dead ghoul in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Ooh, a mummy," and I can be like, "Wow. That's cool." And then he says, okay, the other room here is haunted. I keep the door locked because you hear screaming and wailing there at night. And the funny part is, like, the door is locked, but you can just run around the outside and go to the other room.
Yeah, because the wall has collapsed.
Yes, the wall has collapsed. However, did you come back after midnight?
I did.
There's a ghost.
Mm-hmm. There's ghosts in Fallout.
There are ghosts in Fallout. Are there ghosts in any other Fallout game?
That was my immediate question. I was like, does this ever come back? Because this quest is so weird. It feels like honestly, it could just have been like ported out of someone's vanilla D&D game.
100%. It is definitely like one of those things where you like buy a PDF for $2. It's like 50 adventure, like 50 10-minute adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of thing. Which are cool. That's not a judgment on those, but they have this kind of vibe to them that are like, here's a little small thing you can plop anywhere. It's a little small quest. It's easy to do. It's easy to fit into something else. This is like the platonic ideal of the side quest, I think.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so you go over there and there's a ghost and you can talk to her, and basically in a roundabout way, she says, I had an amulet. And I don't have the amulet anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. She had a locket. Ananias tells you, like, this entire backstory about how she was, like, a princess and all this stuff. She doesn't... I doubt she was actually a princess. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't really corroborate this. In fact, you don't get a good sense of, like, who she was at all. Whether she was, like, a pre-war person or if this is, like, a recent haunting. But yeah, mm-hmm. she has a locket had a locket, and she needs you to find it.
Did you complete this quest?
I did. Did you?
Well, I got a funny story about that. So I eventually the next part of the quest you have to do is you can identify her by talking to mom,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And so we'll talk about mom. Generally, just has two quests. So I can say, I guess, really hyper briefly. Mom intersects with this quest and then another quest that has you just delivering food to someone because mom's constantly making food and giving it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it.
Yep.
that's mom's whole deal. but she's on the other side of town. So I go and talk to her. I'm doing this other quest. I talk to her about the ghost, and she's like, yeah, you know, I don't know much about ghosts, but I do know that there was a girl there up to recently, right? Did she say that?
No, I don't. I just remember her telling me about Joey.
Yes. Okay. Well, for some reason, I think she says something about the girl too. Oh, okay. But I did not write it down. But yeah, then she explains, oh yeah, there's a dude named Joey who was like around there all the time, right? Mm-hmm. If you completed this quest, then our quests then diverge at this moment.
Okay.
And let me explain why. When I entered into the den, Tungsten, of course, is a big strong boy.
Yes.
ready to destroy things with his very sharpened spear. And he's not going to take any guff from anybody, okay?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So when you talk to Joey for the first time, Joey's like, what are you doing on my turf? Joey is, of course, a gangster. He's wearing the leather jacket that we see people wearing in the game. He's got two kind of goons with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's standing at the border of the map between the west and east side. And so I talked to him, you know, because he does look conspicuous there. And I was like, oh, this might be a quest. And so Tungsten talks to him, and Joey says, why are you on my turf? And Tungsten said, your turf? What are you talking about, your turf? You know, I'm Tungsten. Where I go is my turf. And I project a 25-foot radius field of turf around me at all times. Mm-hmm. And so he just aggroed me. Okay? He's got a gun.
Yeah.
I've got a spear. One of his compatriots has a gun, and one of his compatriots has a spear. But here's the thing. Remember, Tungsten has that perk that makes everyone all the time do critical misses.
Oh, right.
And so every combat just turns into people dropping their weapons or shooting themselves or losing their turn constantly. I mean, I'm not exaggerating at all. Please, people who are watching the video, look at the combat that happens in this game around me. It's truly nightmarish. I think Sulik has dropped his hammer in every combat that we have done. Thankfully, he picks it up at the end, or sometimes during combat, which is not something you see happen very often in this game. But, so we start going at it. I'm just stabbing the hell out of Joey, and I'm stabbing the hell out of his buddies, and eventually Joey begins running away.
Mm.
I think he might have run out of ammo, and he probably only had a couple hit points left, and so he just starts booking it, but he's got as many action points as I do, so I cannot catch up to him. Sulik stays around, defeats the other two, or defeats one of the other two. I kill the other one, and I'm chasing after Joey, and eventually we get up to, like, the edge of the map in the north.
Mm.
And I can't pursue Joey without going into the little zone that takes me to the you know, the mega map, the big map.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just hit the end combat button, and combat's over. So I was like, all right, I guess Joey's like, you know, maybe he'll respawn or, you know, something. I don't know. Anyway, I'll never need to talk to him again. Cut to this quest. Much later, I'm talking to Mom, and she's telling me about Joey, and she says, ask him. And so I go back to where Joey was.
Yeah.
And he is not there, of course.
Uh-oh.
And I go up to the top of the map, and I'm thinking, oh, he'll just be there where I ended combat. He's not there either. He's gone. I have run Joey out of town.
Uh-oh.
He's out in the wasteland somewhere forever. So I can't complete the quest.
Well.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. Do you want to know how the quest ends?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Twelinor goes over to the other side of town. She finds Joey and his little gang of toughs and talks to him. And I started asking him questions about, you know, like having stayed in that particular abandoned house, and he is like very defensive about it. He's like, I don't know who told you that. It's like nothing. I didn't stay there. Nothing happened there. And then basically I said, yeah, you know, if you don't give me that locket you took, then this ghost is going to haunt you forever and she'll eventually extract revenge. And he,
dang.
Yeah. And then he freaks out, and gave me the locket. So that was my experience with Joey.
Okay. Well, yeah. What'd you do with it?
So then you have to, wait again, until midnight, at the abandoned house, the ghost shows up and you give her her locket and she's like, oh, great, thanks. And then she turns into a pile of bones.
Whoa.
She's like, poop. just suddenly there's a pile of bones on the ground. The quest is still not over because you have this pile of bones. Now, over on the other map, the other half of the den, there is a graveyard. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I need to bury these bones. So I picked up her bones, walked over to the graveyard, and then I dug up a grave and immediately got bad karma because I was a grave robber. I was like, uh-oh. So then I reloaded, and this time I read every single gravestone to find the one that had the ghost's name, which was Anna Winslow. And then I dug that up, I put the bones in the grave, and I reburied them, and then the quest was over. But
did you get anything?
I got some experience.
Oh, okay.
And then while I was reading the gravestones, I found out that Chris Avalon was dead. He is one of the people who was buried in this graveyard. He was commemorated as the king of the dance floor. So I'm very sorry, Chris, if you're listening. You're still welcome to come on our show, even if you are a ghost. Very, very sorry. Glad you had great dancing skills.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's just, I don't, like, I was like, okay, like, this grave belongs to Chris Avalon, king of the dance floor. All right.
All right.
Which is, again, like, not I think, what people think of when they think of Fallout humor, but that's very 1998 internet humor.
It is.
Right? That's like late 90s webcomic humor.
We often forget the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
People have forgotten the old ways, Michael.
only guardians such as us.
Okay, cool. Well, I think the only thing left to talk about is Metzger, right?
I think I might have a couple. I have a couple of more quests actually that I got.
Really?
Yes. So there is another bar on the other side of town called The Hole. Did you go there?
On the it's on the north side of the other side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's called The Hole, and the bartender there is named Frankie. And when you talk to him, for some reason, I didn't buy a drink from Becky, but when I talked to Frankie, I could say to him, he said something about how they have like the best liquor or something or other, and I could say like, well, how come your drinks are so much more expensive than Becky's then, or something like that. And then he was like, oh, like, here's the thing. Becky's got some sort of supply that I don't know about. Like, you know, go check out whatever's going on in her place for me, and I'll reward you. So, okay, sure.
Yeah, I did not even get this option.
Oh, wow.
I don't believe. Yeah. This did not come up.
So I went over to... And this was actually an interesting moment in the game. So in Becky's bar and casino or whatever, did you happen to see that she has a... So how this is set up is that there's a bar that she is standing behind, and then there is a kind of door behind her, and there is a guard between her and that door.
I accidentally clicked on him at one point, and he said something like, you can't go back here, or something like that.
Did you see him move?
No.
So I had been wandering around at one point earlier in the game, and he walks away from that door, and he walks up to one of the croupiers at the gambling tables, and he, like, hits on her, right? He's like, hey, like, what are you doing after work? Basically, like, clearly, like, it's like the little dialogue lines above his head, and she never, ever responds, but he, like, hits on her for, like, an hour, and then he walks back. And when I first saw this, I was like, oh, that's an interesting bit of, like, little flavor, right? But it turns out this is part of a quest, which I had mixed feelings about. Because when I saw that it was just, like, a little bit of, like, flavor, a little bit of scripting, I was like, oh, that's cute. But no, it's a quest. And it's like, oh, okay. So you wait for him to go hit on that person. And while he is doing that, you can pick the lock on the door that he is guarding. And then you go in, and there's a set of stairs going down to a basement. And in the basement is a still. So you discover Becky's secret, which is that she is making her own liquor. And one of the things that Frankie explains is that he is beholden to the people who make liquor and run it out of New Reno. This is why his is so expensive, is he has to upcharge in order to make a profit, whereas Becky is making her own. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, noted. I'll go tell Frankie that. And then I left the basement, and Sulik, Sulik, who has been following me this entire time, because of the way that this room is set up, Sulik spawns right in the doorway.
Oh, no, Sulik.
And I cannot make him move. I can't push him out of the way. I can't. There's an option at this point in this game when you talk to your followers. You can be like, follow at a like longer distance from me or something like that. Mm-hmm. Which I told him to do, but he didn't move because I couldn't move enough to trigger him to move. So then I was stuck. I was stuck in this room forever because Sulik would never, ever move. So I reloaded and I told Sulik to stand outside. And I did this all again, except I had to do it like 7 times because the first time I just managed to pick the door and go downstairs. Every time after that, I failed to pick the door every single time, right up until the guard comes back and is like, hey, stop that.
Oh, God.
Yep. So I finally did it again. I went over to talk to Frankie, and he offered to pay me or reward me in some way if I were to destroy Becky's still. Now, of course, Twelinor is not going to do any of this. Instead, what I did was tell him to buy his liquor from Becky instead. And he was like, oh, that's a great idea.
That is a great idea.
He's like, so that was that quest. I also,
that's a good, you know what? I just wanted to note, that's a good Fallout quest.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real good, like, in-the-world, realistic feeling end for that quest of, like, oh, we could go the violent route, or we could go the, like, you know, because I'm sure you also had the option or, you know, or some form or function to, like, sell her out to New Reno.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, report on that or whatever. But I think that's a good, maybe you should just buy your liquor from local sources. That's a good option.
just buy locally, Frankie. And then I also delivered some food for Mom. I delivered food to Smitty in the junkyard,
mm-hmm.
And there's a car there that's broken down that you can fix.
Yep.
So there's that.
You know, you can fix that car and drive around in it.
Yes, I remembered that. But we don't have anything near the parts at the moment to do that.
Well, I did have one of the parts off of that damn crashed vertebrae,
right.
But it was stolen by children, so I don't now.
And then, so you said that you had Metzger. Did you do this is going to give it away a little bit. Did you do the gang war?
I did do the gang
war. Okay, all right, because that's sort of related to Metzger, but I wasn't sure if you were counting it or not. So, yeah,
I count that. Yeah, I guess I count that as the Metzger prelude quest. Just to say it kind of briefly, because it's a long quest, but it is not a complicated thing in any way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you talk to, do you remember her name, Laura?
Yeah, Laura.
So you talk to this one, there's a gang hanging out on the west side of town, it led by Laura, and you can talk to her, and she says, hey, there's a church on the other side of town, and it's nefarious looking as all hell. It's like made of black corrugated iron. But she says, There's a guy named Thomas who's over there. He's got a gang, and they're guarding that church. I want to know what's in there. If you go and find out what's in there, and you let me know, I'll give you like 200 caps or something. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money.
His name's Tyler, by the way.
Tyler, okay. And I was like, all right, sure, I'll check it out. And so I go over there, and there's a guy named Tyler hanging out in front. And I say, hey, I would like to go in here and see what you have inside your church warehouse. And he says, well, why would you do that? And I was like, Metzger sent me. And he goes, okay, sure, whatever.
Yep.
Okay. So I zip on in there. I look. There's chemicals in there. Golly gee whiz. There's chemicals.
Surprise.
Okay, I go back out. Yep. I go and talk to Laura again. She says, okay, I'll give you a little bit more money if you go ask Metzger if we can fight this guy for, like, the responsibility of taking over the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, sure. I was like, why can't you do it? She says, well, I don't want Tyler to see my people going and talking to Metzger. So I say, okay. And I run all the way back over there. And I talk to the guy named Metzger. We're going to come back to him in just a second. I say, hey, can they fight? And he says, yeah, they can fight. So I go all the way back. I talk to her again, talk to Laura. And she says, all right, we're going to go beat up these other gang members. You ready? Will you help us? And I was like, yeah, I guess I'll help. And she says, you don't have to fight, but we just need you to be there in case you've betrayed us, right? In case you've lied to us about any of this, we can kick your little butt on the way out of during our retreat, I guess. So I say, okay, we teleport over there. We spawn in. It's me and like five other gangsters. I just stand there while them and Sulik run forward and start beating up Tyler and his other door guard.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only people in this combat.
Yep.
It's these like six people I brought with me and the two people. Crucially, I left something out. There are only two people there because one of Tyler's guards hit it big at the casino and everyone's at a party.
I was going to say, yeah, that's why you attack this night, because they're holding a party.
Yeah, they're holding a party somewhere else. And so yeah, this melee, or it's not really a melee because there's ranged weapons, but there's a combat that occurs. 90% of it is just people shooting themselves and dropping their weapons. It's just a huge, like, issue here of, like, kicking and punching and dropping and fighting in any way. People missing and hitting their allies. But they managed to get through it. And then we win.
Yep.
And they get to control the warehouse.
Yep. And then you get some, like, experience and I think money from Laura for it.
Yeah, I think I got like another 150 or something like that.
Yeah.
Dollars. And we need that because Metzger. You want to talk about Metzger?
Well, I want to give you my version of just some slight differences on my version of this quest first.
Okay.
If only because the experience of it is so weird. So Laura wants to go toe-to-toe with Tyler because they have some sort of history. Mm-hmm. It is not terribly clear what this history is, but anyway, like how this shows up in your quest log, and this is specifically after like you report back to Laura what's going on, and she tells you to go ask Metzger if she can like make a move. What shows up in your quest log in your Pip-Boy, the name of the quest is "Ask Metzger Permission to Start a Gang War," and I was like, wait, so that's what I'm doing right now? I'm starting a gang war? Thing number one. Thing number two, I'm asking for permission? Which I guess that's what happened. The actual combat itself played out very similar to what you just described, except because I don't have, like, this wacky chaos failure thing going on. Everyone was much more competent. In fact, so competent that once they killed Tyler and his friend or whatever, they just kept going down the street gunning down civilians. And I was like, this isn't good. These aren't people who are part of this. But I could not make them stop without killing them. So what I ended up doing is I just left. I just like walked out of the map. I was like, all right, see ya, I'm out. And then when I came back, they had all reset. But for a while, I was really scared because, like, something had happened with the scripting, and Laura and her team were just, like, mowing across the side of this side of the den, just, like, taking everyone out.
That seems bad.
Yeah, it was very bad. So that's how that worked out. And, yeah, Metzger. So Metzger, as he is extremely eager to tell you, is a slaver.
Yeah, basically the things that are going on in this town in a general sense are drugs and slaves.
Mm-hmm. Metzger like has a little base of operations up in the northern part of the east side map. There is a pen of people behind this building, and they are all screaming, asking to be let out, asking for help.
Yeah.
It is very, very sad. And Metzger, again, right, like, you walk in and you can just be like, hey, guys, what's going on here? And they all will just yell at you and be like, and I'm going to use drop some F-bombs because these guys love F-bombs. They're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? We're fucking slavers. Because I guess that's what happens when you become a slaver, is that you just swear all the time also. I mean, I guess. It's not like you got anything to protect in terms of virtue.
That's true, yeah.
But
you're a bad person.
Yeah.
I just want to go on record here. Too much future. People who keep slaves, they're bad.
Yeah, bad.
Bad.
Yeah, so Metzger's got this group of like guards around him, and they'll all swear at you. And he also has locked up in a side room the person we are looking for, our friend Vic. And
whose character model looks nothing like anyone else on this planet.
Yep.
He's like a tall, bald man who appears like he has. The lighting for his model is different from everyone else. He has, like, cool blue lighting.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, Vic is not a talking head, but his model is unique, and it's just strange, right? It makes him feel, on the one hand, kind of ontologically distinct from Sulik, and on the other hand, not quite of the common run of NPC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's being kept in a side room, and it's like guarded. There's a guard by it, and the door is locked. And if you try to open the door, the guard like yells at you and is like, don't do that. Right. Like he threatens you. But then you can ask the guard nicely to let you in. And he's just like, oh, yeah, sure. And he just opens the door for you. Did you encounter this, or was that maybe a Twelinor high speech check thing?
No, I had to do all kinds of, yeah, I had to do all kinds of stuff. I had to buy Vic.
Oh. Well.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So the situation is Vic sold Metzger a radio. And the radio was in some way faulty, and because Metzger is a real piece of crap, he decided that the best way to resolve this would be to enslave Vic and then make him like toil away fixing Vic's, or like make Vic toil away fixing the faulty radio that he sold Metzger.
This is our new vocal warm-up. Make Vic toil. Make Vic toil. Yeah, he does that, and he lets a little bit of information slip, too, there, which I think is pretty cool. He says that he wants Vic... He bought the radio from Vic in order to receive or intercept transmissions from the Enclave and knew... And then he interrupts himself, and he's like, why am I telling you all this? And I think New Reno.
Yes.
Which we already know a little bit about. But we don't really know. I think this is the first time we've seen the word Enclave.
Yes,
right?
I was going to say, I was going to bring this up before you mentioned the crashed vertebrate. But, like, yeah, this is, like, for me at least, the first time the Enclave has appeared in-game is he's just like, I'm trying to pick up transmissions from the Enclave. And you can be like, what was that? And he's like, shut up. You don't need to.
Oh, I couldn't even ask what was that.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, cool. So yeah, I had to run around. Basically, all the money that you got to hang on to, that all went into my buy Vic's freedom fund.
Oh,
And so I did that. And Metzger really doesn't have a lot going on other than that.
Well, did you? Did you talk? You didn't talk to Vic at all before.
No,
before buying him.
No, I couldn't because I couldn't open the door.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, I take that back. I'm so sorry. That is wrong. I was allowed to talk to him, and I went and talked to him, but we didn't have any dialogue options, basically, other than him telling me, like, about what he's there to do. He's fixing the radio.
Oh.
I didn't have any other depth conversation there. And I thought, once I go through this thing to do that, you know, like, I will be able to have more conversations. But I also ran into a wall with that I'll explain in a minute.
Oh, okay. So that's fascinating because when I talked to Vic... Again, because the guard yelled at me for trying to open the door, but then when I talked to him and asked nicely if he would let me in, he was like, yeah, sure, I just didn't want... He actually acknowledges that he had stopped you from opening the door earlier. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, I just wanted to make sure you weren't up to any good. And then he, like, lets you in. And Vic, told me, at least, he was like, hey, like, you know, I can get out of here if you get me parts to fix this radio. But you need to go get my radio, right, my working radio, back at my house in Klamath. Mm-hmm. Now, luckily, I had already taken this radio when I had looted Vic's house in Klamath, so I just handed it right over. And he fixes the radio, and then Metzger reneges and does not release Vic from slavery. So then I was in your position where I had to either buy Vic back, or because I was a lady, Metzger offered to reduce Vic's price by half if I would sleep with him.
That's Fallout 2, y'all.
Fallout 2, boom. Y'all.
Boom. What'd you do? Did you do it?
No. So I had a real moment of reflection here. Twelinor had a real moment of reflection. Recall that I have decided that I'm going to play Twelinor as just the best person that she can possibly be, right? That is like what she's going to aspire toward. In fact, actually encountering the ghost made me realize, like, oh, okay, I'm just going to play her as Dale Cooper.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, good.
Like, just extremely weird, naive, Boy Scoutish, and, like, constantly encountering weird shit with a straight face.
Okay.
However, the next kind of couple steps here are not very Dale Cooper-ish, because I was thinking about this, and this is an interesting bit of design. If this were Junktown, we would eventually probably be given a quest where we could take Metzger out.
Absolutely.
Right? Because despite the fact that this, like, entire town's economy runs on drugs and slaves, the people don't really like Metzger. Like, you can talk about Metzger, and they're, like, no one here is hot on the idea of there being slavery, really, except for the people who are buying and selling slaves. At the same time, there is no one says, like, hey, please stop this slavery trafficking happening. That's not a quest, right? That is not something that is given to you. But nevertheless, Eleanor, who is moved by her deep moral convictions as an abolitionist, decided to just wipe these people out.
Going full Balthazar.
Yep. And then they killed me. They killed me and Sulik. Yeah. They just destroyed me.
Yeah.
So I reloaded.
They have a lot of armor.
They do.
And guns.
They have a lot of armor and guns. Reloaded. I went over back to Tubby's, and I bought an SMG for Sulik. Sulik and I roll into Metzger's.
All those gecko skins are really paying off.
Yeah. I'm also, like, stealing stuff from people, so...
I like that... I do like that if you talk to Sulik, you know, and you can do this for all the NPCs throughout this game and the last one, just be like, Sulik, what kind of guns are you good with? Or what kind of weapons can you use? And he'll be like, well, I can use hammers, I can use knives, and SMGs.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, very explicitly, you can use submachine guns.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So Sulik and I go into the slavery headquarters, and the way this is set up is that there's kind of like a lobby with some guards in it. And then there's a doorway, and there's sort of a back office type room with Metzger and like one or two guards. Or it's maybe it's like two or three. So what happened the first time is I just like pulled out my gun and I shot Metzger in the head. And then all the guards aggroed me, and they all ran in and shot me and Sulik to death. This time, okay. I go into the back office. I turn around, I close and lock the door behind me.
Devious.
Yes. And then I shoot Metzger in the head. And there's only the like specific guards in this room that I have to deal with. So Sulik and I take them out. However, we're still getting shot by guards in the other room because it turns out that there's like a little service window in this office, like looking into that lobby, and the guards who are out there can see us and they're like shooting in. This also means I can take cover and shoot out. So Sulik and I are like hiding in this room, shooting people through the service window. And eventually, after some very tedious walking around, trying to like kite the guards into places where we can actually shoot them, we kill them all. And then I unlocked the back door of the building and told the slaves that they were free and got some experience for that. And then I went and told Vic that he was free. And he was like, oh, neat. And then I was like, you want to join my party? And he was like, sure.
That's cool. I'll do that in 200 years. when Hypertongston fulfills his destiny. Yeah, I didn't do that. I just participated in the slave economy.
Yeah.
Like a real jack off.
I am pleased with how playable this game is for me. Just like hiding and shooting, essentially.
Yeah. But here's the kicker for me.
Mm-hmm.
I could not recruit Vic into my party.
Oh.
So here's why, Michael.
Okay.
In Fallout 1, just recruit party, you know, do whatever the hell you want. Your maximum party size in Fallout 2 is determined by one half of your charisma. Your charisma halved, rounded down.
Huh.
My charisma is 3. I can have one party member.
Wow. All right.
Yep, indeed.
That means I can have quite a few party members, huh?
Yep. Yep. I can have one. So I got to choose between Sulik and Vic here. Vic tells you two here, somewhere in this conversation, he says, hey, because I asked, hey, where the hell's Vault 13? You got all this Vault 13 crap.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where'd it come from? And he says, well, actually, I'll be honest with you. I get it from a dude who lives in Vault City. I've never seen Vault 13, but Vault City is to the east. Vault City. He says, and we can go talk to that guy if you want to. And I said, okay. And then I saved my game because that was the end of what I did.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the end of the den.
Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on twitter.com @WarrenIsDead.
You got anything you need to plug?
No, not really.
Okay. You can find me, go to twitter.com/RangedTouch to get more information about other Range Touch shows. You can go to twitch.tv/RangedTouch and youtube.com/RangedTouch, which you're probably at right now watching this video. If you want to support the show, as little as $1 a month really does help out and seriously contributes to the mission of Range Touch. You can go to patreon.com/RangedTouch. All these links that I said are down in the description below this video. If you donate at $3 a month or support at $3 a month on the Patreon, you can get access to the show as a podcast feed in case you don't want to go to YouTube and do it that way. You want to put it in your convenient thing. An easy charge of $3 a month. That's less than a cup of coffee at most places. So think about that. It really does help us out. Helps pay for hosting and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we will see you in 2 weeks on the next one where we're going to... theoretically Vault City, but there might be somewhere in the middle first.
Some mysterious place.
Ooh, goodbye.
Bye.